For most of the last century, Americans had certain romantic notions about Paris. These notions were nurtured in literature, in movies, in songs, even in children's books. Today, we conclude our month-long series of dispatches about real life in Paris from commentator David Sedaris, who moved to France 2 years ago. Today, his mission is simple: to compare what Paris is like in April to what you might think if you believe what you hear in a classic old song, a 1932 jazz standard, April in Paris.
April in Paris, chestnuts in blossom.
April 4th, 1999. Yesterday afternoon, I walked to the grocery store and bought a half a rabbit, never making the connection that this is Easter. It's a little like eating reindeer for Christmas or Founding Father on the 4th of July. My half a rabbit was prepackaged, cut into pieces and arranged in a styrofoam casket, much like a quartered fryer. I was out of the house while he was cooking and didn't realize until later that when they say half a rabbit, they really mean half a rabbit. I was serving myself seconds when I noticed half the rabbit's head lying in profile at the bottom of the pot. They must have sawed this thing right down the middle. I examined half the rabbit's brain and wondered which variety of thoughts it included. Was this the half that warned it instinctively to stay away from dogs, or the half that contained childhood memories and held grudges against family members? I prodded it with a fork, realized that I could have eaten it by accident, and had half a mind to become a vegetarian.
Till April in Paris, whom can I run to?
April 26th, 2000. Our friend Jane Snow is in town, so last night we went to a big, noisy fair they hold each year on the far edge of Paris. None of us are much for rides, so we just walked around eating ice cream until Jane encouraged us to take up arms and try shooting a few balloons. I hadn't fired a gun since I was 10 years old, and even then I'd given up after my first shot missed the target and hit a golf cart parked a good 50 feet away. Last night at the fair, I lifted a pellet rifle to my shoulder, and had an NRA representative been on hand, I would have joined immediately. The thing I've discovered about guns is that they're actually an incredible amount of fun. It might be a little man's way of feeling powerful, but hey, I'm a little man, so what the hell? It's good enough for me.
April in Paris. This is the feeling no one can ever reprieve.
April 28th, 2000. Last month, I went to the hospital for a kidney stone, and this morning I returned for a follow-up appointment, consisting of a series of painless x-rays. I've had a lot of doctor's appointments lately, and they all seem to follow a familiar pattern. I generally start off okay, but there always comes a point when I have no idea what's being said to me. I usually ask the speaker to repeat the question, and when I still fail to understand, I'll smile and say, "Okay, that sounds great." This morning, a nurse led me to a little chamber and told me to strip to my underpants. This was followed by something I couldn't understand for the life of me. "Okay," I said. "That sounds great." I undressed, and a few minutes later, the nurse called me out of my chamber. I followed her voice through the back door and entered a room where, out of the 30 to 40 inhabitants, I was the only one in my underwear. It was a bad dream brought to life, and as the crowd stared, I gathered that the second part of the nurse's instructions probably had something to do with a robe hanging on the back of the door. The woman led me to the x-ray lab where I laid on the table, realizing that once they'd finished with me, I'd have to walk back through the waiting room in my underpants. "Is it possible to take more pictures of my inside?" I asked. "The feeling is pleasant, and it is all the time happy to be safe."
Holiday tables under the tree.
April 29th, 2000. This evening at dinner, I watched an aggressive American couple tell a group of French people to put out their cigarettes. Occasionally, when visitors ask for the non-smoking section, the waiter will remove the ashtray from their table, saying, "There you go." Tonight, the waiter said nothing, and so the Americans tried to stop everyone around them from enjoying themselves. To make things just that much more insulting, they attempted to order their neighbors around in English, saying, "We're trying to eat here," and, "Don't you know that cigarettes are bad for you?" Having been driven out of my own country by such bullies, it pleased me to watch the American couple slowly disappear into a bank of thick blue smoke. They should have known better than to vacation in Europe, which is basically just one big ashtray. And besides that, unless you're with the Marine Corps, you can't really go into someone else's country and start ordering people around. I'm often told that the draconian anti-smoking laws will soon be universal, but I'm not quite sure I believe it. If you're going to tax people into oblivion, you've got to leave them with some small scrap of comfort. While American cities burn, French cities simply smoke.
David Sedaris writes about life in France in his latest book, Me Talk Pretty One Day. Today's commentary was produced by Susan Burton and Ira Glass.